Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Candy, aka Single Mama Diva, here, and I would like to welcome you to my life support radio show. And today I would like for you to help me welcome my guest. She occasionally models or appears as a guest on TV, on television. However, Charlie is most regarded for her exceptional skill as a personal strategist, which putting yourself first is the message that is embedded in her upcoming book. With a personal life resume, which includes healing from trauma and transforming every aspect of her life, Charlie speaks directly from personal life experience. She is a pioneer in the realm of therapy and coaching, providing her clients with a cutting-edge alternative that creates results fast, saving them time and money. Now, most of you all know that I like to have people on the show that have something very valuable to offer. And I had the privilege of talking with Charlie on an occasion a couple of weeks ago, and I was so pleased to have met her and spoken with her, because I think you will be able to feel her genuineness and her ability to be able to do exactly what was stated in the introduction, where she's able to cut through all of the red tape of healing and help you get in touch with what you have that can help you heal yourself. So without taking up too much time, because something tells me that this time is going to go by really fast, I would like for you to help me welcome Charlie to the show.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Candy.
Hi, I'm so glad you're here. I can't wait to dig into what we have going on today. How are you?
I am fantastic. It's been a beautiful day here out on the West Coast, and it's just, you know, spring and summer are coming. It's so great.
Rub it in. I'm in Cleveland. It's cold. It's cloudy. It's rainy.
Oh, I'm sending you sunshine, but you know it's coming. I hail from the East Coast, so I know what that's like, and you know it's coming. It's May, so it's coming.
Yeah. Well, since we've talked last, I have definitely been thinking about our conversation, and we have some things that we want to get into to kind of share with everyone what it is that you do. But I would like for you to just kind of tell everyone your story and how you came to be who you are today.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, I hail from the East Coast, Boston to be exact, and my time there, it definitely had a huge impact on my life, because when I was born in the early 70s, my parents were pioneers in the interracial relationship sense. So we actually put up with quite a bit of stuff. I mean, we had a lot of people who wanted us to know that they didn't agree with such a thing, and mm-hmm. we endured our pets being poisoned and our vehicles being spray-painted. And in the beginning, we kind of moved from place to place trying to find a place that we thought would be safe. And I think one of the lessons that I didn't appreciate early on, but I came to realize later, was that, you know, when you run, you'll always run. And at some point, you have to stop and you have to say, you know what, I'm not going to run anymore, because otherwise you'll just be running forever. And I think that's true of anything. So I've been highly intuitive since I was a child, and I remember things even when I was just a toddler, always observing how people behaved and what they did and whether or not it looked like what the actions or the choices that they were taking were actually going to get them what they seemed to desire. And so often I could see that, you know, they wanted A, but they did B, and B was going to equal C. And I thought, well, why are they doing that? So that kind of started all of my interest in people and our actions and just what we do in our lives. And I think I was definitely on that path throughout my school years, I felt like I didn't quite fit in, of course, because of the not only the racial stuff, but just the natural things that I think all of us go through in our adolescence. And so I really relied on my brain. And I thought, you know what, you're just going to go to college, you're going to get a degree, you're going to be a brainiac, and you're going to have an office with your name on it. And I don't know what you're going to do yet, but it's going to be great. And in my sophomore year of college, I was assaulted. And that just flipped everything upside down for me in my world because I didn't understand why. You know, it was rape specifically. I didn't get it. I didn't feel pretty. I wasn't that girl in high school that a lot of men were interested in romantically. So I really didn't understand what that was about for me. And I ended up leaving school and eventually repressed that trauma for 7 years. And basically after about 7 years, I hid in my body by putting on an extra 45 pounds. I got married. I just decided in that moment that everything that I wanted, I couldn't have anymore. So I created another persona and another life. And at some point in that last year of repressing that trauma, I took all the weight off, and I had about 6 months of absolute bliss with, you know, this new body and this new attitude, and then everything kind of hit the fan and said, and I realized, oh my goodness, this is what's happening. This is what happened to me. And it started with just migraines and being rushed to the hospital, not being able to figure out what was wrong, you know, why I was experiencing pain in my skin. And eventually my doctor said, something's going on that's trying to come up and you need to let it come up. And through a little bit of meditation, it came up. So then I was faced with having to change everything. And that's what really shaped what I do today, because I couldn't find a coach or a therapist to work with me that wanted to work on my terms. And everybody said, look, this is a lengthy process, and you can't just be building this great life. We have to figure out everything that happened first. And I said, no. Why can't we do that at the same time? You know, I just took 7 years from me, and I'm not going to dwell on it, but I want to move. And so, you know, here I am today having transformed just about every aspect of my life. And that excitement over taking the reins and doing it myself and seeing personally some of the holes in traditional therapy and coaching, they fueled my work personally and then my work with others, because I knew that I needed to be there for other people like myself who might say, look, you know what, I know I have the tools and I appreciate what you want to do, but why do we have to do it that way? Why can't you meet me on my terms? And so I meet everybody on their terms and say, let's get it done as quickly as possible so you can live better now.
Oh, that's so delicious. That's so delicious. I think that's what led to our hour and a half conversation, just running off at the mouth, because it just sounds so forward moving and it doesn't leave a whole lot of time for blaming and being stuck. I mean, sure, you go through those things, but it sounds so good to talk with someone which I'm finding, how the universe unfolds when you begin to live your truth, and then you start just connecting with people who kind of has the same, you know, truth that you have or vibration that you have. And I'm running into more and more people like you who are really sincere about helping people and meeting them where they are. I think that is so key, because I think we've all had our experiences with therapists, and it can be extremely frustrating, you know. And it wasn't until I got educated and looked at first the book knowledge that they have to go through, and then go and look at all of the state requirements and the licensure and the guidelines, and, you know, you can't possibly help anyone on a very deep level when you have to go through so much stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with the client, and people are tired of it, and people are looking for people like us who will say, look, you need to make a decision. This is how we're going to go about it. You need to change your life. This is how we're going to do it. And if it doesn't work, there are millions of different ways to do it. You don't have to do it A, B, C, D, you know, because I think that's another myth, is that there's just one way to do it, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, we've already seen that even in the classroom, how we all learn in different ways, you know, and some of us take the information in this way. But, you know, the one thing that I think is universal is action. There is nothing like action to make a change. And there's nothing like action to, if you're working off of an old set of beliefs and then you bring in some new habits that you want to create in your life, there is nothing that's going to do that except actions. You can talk about it all you want, but what's actually going to make that become reflexive in your life so that you tend to do that more than what you used to do is you taking the actions that support that.
Well, can you go into more depth about what makes your approach with clients so unique?
Absolutely. First of all, my approach is completely solution-oriented. As you can imagine, I want to get there, and I want to get there as quickly as possible. And so when I don't look at things like self-esteem and self-worth, because to me, those are labels that we have given people that still have, they're like umbrellas for such a huge number of things. And when we start there, we have to go through so much minutiae to actually get to the point. So I want to cut to the chase. So for me, I'm only focused on results. I want to know, why are you getting the results you're getting, or why do you feel like you do about the results you're getting? And then what's creating them, and what do we need to change to get the ones that you want or get the feelings that you're looking for in life? That's the first thing that makes my approach unique. And so what I found with myself, having gone through, you know, my own kind of self-help type of thing when I was first getting started in my healing process, was that the more I learned in a lot of these books, the easier it was to fool myself. And the one thing that doesn't lie is your results. So I actually experienced that firsthand in realizing, wow, I'm learning all this great stuff, and I can sit down and tell people all about this and that, but what's actually happening in my life? And over time, what I discovered is that, you know, we have this tendency, especially with traumas, we always look at, you know, well, you went through this trauma, and I actually never read a book on rape when I went through my healing process, because what I realized was that the most significant thing for me to make sure that my life was on track and it was happy and bountiful was to figure out, what did I do with the trauma? How did it change what my new actions and choices were going to be? So, for instance, when it first happened, oh, it changed everything. Because I made up that because that happened to me, I could no longer have the life I wanted. So naturally, every single thing that was part of my original goal set or set of goals, I threw out because I said, you can't have that anymore. So then I just kind of started creating this new person with new things. What I find with my clients is that no matter what they're going through, there are certain things deep down inside, usually subconscious, that are driving their choices and actions. And no matter how much they know, no matter how many conferences they go to and books that they read, if we don't pinpoint what those individual things are, it's like your DNA, and none of them, no set is the same for any one person that I've ever seen. We can overlap each other, but we always have our own unique set. Once we find out what those are, now I can show you, look at all these things that have happened in your life. You see, and they go, oh, that makes total sense. I get it. So number one, we take away that feeling of frustration and confusion, or that you're a victim or you don't know what the heck has been going on. And then the second thing is, now that we know what they are, we can go through them and say, okay, does this really make sense? Where'd you pick this one up? Okay, now what is actually true for you? Now we got a new set. And it's not that you're going to miraculously, you know, forget all that old stuff. But what I teach my clients is I give them a strategy, tools that they can use so that on a daily basis they increase their awareness, they're aware of when the old stuff is trying to drive them, and they can go, oh, I see you, no, and then they engage the new stuff. And the more that you do that, the less the old stuff drives your choices, and the more the new stuff does it right from the get-go.
Very good. You know, when you start talking, you know, I'm just listening.
I get so excited. I know, Candy. I get so
yeah. It is so good because I even think about when I've always been very curious about behavior, like you say, very curious, but more curious just about myself. So I've always done these self evaluations and surveys and all anything I see, any personality thing that I see. And it's amazing how when you really, you know how they say if you look for something, you're going to find it.
Uh-huh.
And I always struggle with the feeling of dread. Like, I get a lot done and I do what I do, but I always dread something until I'm actually doing it. I dread working out. I dread, you know, starting any type of routine, you know. Even if I have something that I'm excited about, I'm like, oh God, it's coming, you know. And I realized that it was anxiety, you know. Excited about it, but also I have a mind that kind of goes through so many different things, you know. And I do this. I use this tool called Human Design. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, and I remember when I had a reading, and it was and it shows you your body chart. It kind of uses the chakras, but it has like a nine center. It has nine centers instead of seven, and it shows that I have a open root, which constantly makes which makes you feel kind of rushed, like pressure to do things. It makes you feel pressure to hurry up and do something and get it over with. But I didn't know that had I not explored what it was. And I remember when I had a reading and she told me what type of feeling that produces. And I said, I have that all the time, even when I'm driving. Oh, God, I got to hurry up and get out here and do what I have to do. And I know how to meditate and calm myself down, but I always found myself in that rushed feeling, trying to hurry up and do something and get it out of the way, thinking that it was going to get rid of that feeling. And I'm going somewhere with this.
Mm-hmm.
When she gave me my reading and she said, you tend to feel rushed because you have an open root. I didn't tell her I felt rushed. She just read it and told me because it goes with the design. And I said, yes, I do. I said, and it brings on a feeling of dread because I want to hurry up and do something, get it over with and say it's accomplished, it's done, and get it off of me. And she said, that feeling's never going to go away. She said, that is a feeling that is a part of who you are, and it's okay as long as you know what it's designed to do. It's designed to motivate you. It's designed to do things, but you're using it out of fear and rush because you think you can relieve that feeling. She said, but the feeling won't go away until you accept that it's there and learn how to live with it and kind of just work with it, and then eventually. Do you know immediately after she told me that, because I wasn't even starting a workout regimen because I was thinking, oh, God, if I start a workout regimen, I have to do this, I have to do that. And I just started my workout regimen. I did it. It's just only been a month. It is 10 pounds later. 4% body fat is gone. I've accomplished so much since she told me that's not going away. Now, I don't know if you agree with that, but I found it to be very useful to tell people that some things aren't going to go. If you wait for certain things to go away before you start doing something, you may never get started. Is there a way that you get people motivated to get to work on something instead of waiting for something to go, a feeling to go away? Well, I'm afraid. I'm going to wait until I'm no longer afraid, or I don't feel like it right now. How do you motivate people to get through that?
Well, one of the things that I show people is to use every part of themselves as a tool. And that came out of, you know, me having something that at one point I used to completely repress my entire life and suppress who I am as an individual. And then took it and said, how can I use this and what can I draw from it to actually boost me ahead of where I might have even been at this point if it never happened? And so similar to you, okay, so you have this, like you said, this openness. But what I would do is I would say, okay, So you have this fear, this anxiety, which, you know, with all the people suffering from anxiety today, which the numbers are so much higher, anxiety is caused by a fear of the new, of the unknown. So one of the things when that's happening is you use that as a tool, and you, number one, you become more aware so that now you know it's something that happens all the time. Well, when that happens, you have to look at that and say, okay, what am I making up right now about this? Because for you to dread something, you've already made up that there's a reason that you need to dread it. So you need to find out, what is that specifically? Okay, so if you break down, well, I'm not going to have enough time, well, then you actually look at all the things that you are making up that's causing you to feel that feeling, explore them, and then create a strategy to deal with them. It's that simple. We're not changing who you are. We're not trying to erase something or suppress something or say an affirmation and make it not so. We're saying, no, this is a part of who I am and this is what I have a tendency to do, but okay, so now how do I work with it and how do I use it to my advantage? So every time that feeling comes up for you, you now know that you're making up something about whatever it is that you want to do. And especially when you're clear that there is a positive end result to doing it, then you just need to break those things down, look at what your worst case scenario is, and go, okay, then how do I make my best case scenario? Because for somebody like you, if you're worried about time and having time, you know how fantastic that of a tool that is? That can actually help you be on top of your schedule so that you don't overcommit, so that when you start to feel that dread, you can take a few minutes right then and say, let me draw this out so that it works for me. And then I don't have to dread it because I already know that I've planned accordingly. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I do with all my clients, no matter what it is. And the point is, when we figure out, again, that's what drives your choices and actions. That dread that you had is what would actually drive you to, despite the fact that you know it's great to work out, you want this great result, at the same time, it drives you to go, I'm not going to start until next week. So it's not really about motivating people. It's about helping them really own who they are and then figure out how to work with who they are to their advantage.
Well, tell me about the book.
No. I wrote a book. I'm so excited about this. And the women, I think the women and the men out there are going to love it, but I wrote it for women because I'm a woman, and it was very much a part of my own personal journey with interpersonal relationships of the romantic kind. It's called Thank Goodness You Dumped His Ass, because now you can have the relationship you really want. And again,
yay!
And you know, the double entendre really is that when you figure out all of that information that is hidden within your past romps and romance, I am telling you, you will not believe the insight that is there for you. And so often, you know, because of the emotional side of it, we kind of come through this stuff, and then we just, you know, everybody talks about how you have baggage. But to me, baggage really is nothing more than a whole bunch of lessons that you haven't learned yet, and you're carrying them around, and they're heavy because you haven't figured out what they mean. And when you figure out what they mean, they almost become like your wings that help you ascend to the heights you want to get to, because all of a sudden, boom, every time you get one and it makes sense, you're like, ah, you're a little bit lighter, and all of a sudden things are a little bit more clear, and you go, I get it. I know how to do that. And in romantic relationships, I think what's so important, and this is one thing that I happen to be good at with myself because I've learned over the years, I don't do myself any good if I am not willing to confront my deepest, darkest, wrong, whatever you want to call it. But I have to look at myself as objectively as possible and say, what's your role, Charlie? Because if I don't and I try to put the blame somewhere else, I'm only going to keep myself stuck. So the book, Thank Goodness You Dumped His Ass, is a purely strategic guide. It's a no-nonsense, and yet it's fun, and it's got stories, all true stories of myself and my clients, and just all the things that we do to help women from 1 to Z. You know, it's like A to Z. This is exactly how you position yourself in the place emotionally and physically for a fabulous relationship. This is how you determine who that relationship can actually be with and what he actually looks like from the inside out. And then here's the way that you process your past so that with every relationship you've had or experience you've had, you can actually use it to your advantage to boost your results instead of causing you to have resistance to the process, attract the wrong guys, or just, you know, sabotage a great guy. Because, you know, you always hear that everything happens for a reason, but I got to say, sometimes you're the reason. I've been the reason many times in my life. So we need to, like, look at the whole bit of wisdom that you know, that old adage is, because it's more than just saying, it just wasn't supposed to be. You know what? Sometimes it was an opportunity, and we blow it. So the good news is there's always another one, and we can poise ourselves for the next one. But that's what this book is about. I'm really excited about it.
Well, let's get a little personal here, and I'm going to go there with you. I want you to tell me one belief that you had that you felt maybe caused you to resist in relationship, and the lesson you learned from that belief, or banishing that belief, or overcoming it if it was negative.
Right. Well, let me think about that. If I was going to say, I've always kind of believed in relationships, actually. When I wrote this book, the reason why I wrote it is because for the first time, I went through a divorce, which was really unnecessarily difficult. And it was, you know, my ex that was making it so, and I kept trying to have everything be good. And it didn't work out because that was his choice, and I couldn't do anything about it. But what happened is I actually attracted an amazing partner, and I found myself with some angry thoughts one morning and almost taking it out on him, and realized, oh my goodness, this is how we sabotage relationships. If I was going to say a belief, I guess not consciously, but unconsciously, I don't think I believed that I could have everything that I wanted in a relationship. I think that my belief, yes, I got it. Sometimes it takes a second. The belief that I had that got in my way for a long time is that I was too idealistic. I really started to think that maybe I was too idealistic. And, you know, when you think that way, then, you know, you start to say, well, maybe everything I'm asking for isn't quite, possible. Maybe it's not possible.
When did you... Do you remember a turning point and what your new belief is in place of that?
The turning point for me was that after I went through my divorce, I was contemplating this idea of, am I too idealistic or not? And then I looked at my life and I said, you know what, I actually really enjoy my time. And I looked at it as a ratio. I said, if between the good days and the bad days, because we all have them and it's just part of life, but if I can say that, you know, I'm averaging anywhere from 85 to 95% all the time, taking in the good and taking in the bad and everything in between, then if I add somebody, they've got to at least hit my ratio. Like, I can't have my ratio go down if I'm adding a person to the mix. And so the piece that I made with that was that I decided that if I was being too idealistic about something as simple as that, which I really thought when I looked at it that way, I was like, that's not being idealistic, that's being honest. And I broke down exactly what it was I was looking for within the relationship so I could really be clear about, am I being idealistic? What is it I'm actually asking for? Which is one of the things I teach women how to do in the book, from the inside out, comprehensively. Once I did that, I saw, no, you're not being idealistic. You're being really honest about only wanting to add something that's going to add to your life, and, of course, wanting to make sure that the person who adds to your life, you're adding to his, because that's the only way you're both going to be happy and the relationship's going to thrive. And as soon as I did that, I just got comfortable about the whole process, and right off the bat, I started meeting fantastic men. And the first several I met, they were not for me. But what I noticed was that the qualities that they had were fantastic. And so many of them were so close to what I was looking for. There were just little things that were missing. And I said, you know what? We've come this far. And again, I'm not going to go without that. And if I'm not meant to have a relationship, if for some reason I don't meet him, then I don't meet him. But the other thing was just recognizing that there's a number of choices out there for any of us. So, you know, a lot of women, they think, oh, there's only one guy, or there's only one love for me, or, you know, and all those things just totally put limitations on you, and they change the way that you act and the way that you think.
Right. I think this reminds me of when I was a kid. I remember my saying, you know, was always, that's not fair. That's not fair. That's not fair. And I took that with me, but I didn't know that I took that with me. And I didn't realize how I'm always trying to even out the playing field when I was in my early relationships and looking and making sure that, you know, I'm not doing way more than they are, way more work. And I mean, I really would do that in life. I mean, I think that was one of the main driving points for me with racism. I'm real big on justice and equality for everybody and justice for all. I would see something on TV and I would say, that's not fair. That's not fair, Dad. Why are they doing that? You know, and my parents, you know, both of them have a kind of an accepting quality, and I never inherited that from them. And that was a very hard thing for me to overcome, and I've carried that over into my relationships as an undercurrent. I always was kind of easygoing, but I wasn't easy because I was always trying to make sure everything was fair, and it took me a while. I think after I, you know, released and had my divorce and went through a complete transformation and realized, wow, if I lose or my perception of loss, it doesn't necessarily mean something bad is on the other side of it, and I can lose and still win. It doesn't mean I can give more than the other person. I can love more than the other person. I can do more than the other person. And as long as I know who I am, and I don't do what I want to do or do what I do from a wrong place, I'm not losing. I'm being authentic. But if I'm constantly looking at somebody saying, wait a minute, did they take two steps forward? If they didn't take two steps forward, I'm not taking two steps forward. You know, very, very childish. And I remember after I, quote, unquote, I don't like to say lost, but lost, you know, the first identity of who I thought I wasn't afraid to lose anymore. And the moment I wasn't afraid to lose anymore, like you, I just saw different, more quality lovers, potential lovers. And it was like, wow, you know, they really fit. You know, before I was looking at, is this going to be fair? Is this going to be 50-50? You know, is this person going to try to take advantage of me? Rather than looking at who I was, what I have to offer, being authentically me. And when I was authentically myself, I attracted someone else who was authentically themselves. And even when people approach you from an unauthentic place, because you're operating from a genuine place, it encourages them to come out and they'll say, wow, you know, I've never felt this comfortable around anybody else before. I never told anybody that before. You know, I never shared that with anybody that, but I feel comfortable being around you. And that's when the light bulb went off. Wow, if I just be me, you know, and fair to myself and just be who I am, I don't have to worry about losing. I don't have to worry about that. But that's just amazing how we come with these things and then we learn from them. And then they're the same, it's the same type of energy. It's like the flip side of it. And you just take it and turn it around for the good and it works.
Absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is, like you mentioned, the, you know, the fairness and the 50-50. That attitude is really prevalent today in a lot of relationships. A lot of my clients, they come in and they think they have these relationships that are just, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And when we look at it, you know, they walk out an hour later saying, I actually have a really great relationship. I say, yeah, you're just looking at the wrong things. Because, you know, the funny part is We always talk about this 50-50 thing, but if you think about it, before you have anybody else there, aren't you doing 100%?
That's right.
You're doing 100%, right? So let me ask you this. What sense does it make for you to now decrease putting in 100% into your own life to 50 and having another person decrease from 100% to 50, and now two people combined, you're only averaging 50 because you have to split 100% between two people. Does that make any sense?
Exactly.
You know,
people
don't think it's a simple thing, but it's huge, because here's the thing. What you should be concerned about is what it is, what do you want to feel? What do you want to get? What do you want to experience together? And then what you've got to look at is can we do it together? But if both of you have an attitude that you're excited about being together, you're not worried about exactly who's putting in which number from day to day, but you both actually come to the relationship ready to put in 100% of you, then guess what? Now you're averaging on your best days 200% for both of you, which is way more than you were getting by yourself. And on those days when one or both of you is, you know, plagued by the usual stresses of life, you still have much more. You're still averaging over 100% between the two of you, even if your levels drop because you've got stuff that's going on. That's what people miss. And when they set up a relationship with this kind of tit-for-tat 50-50, they're already at a low point to start. And then where do you go?
It's I think it's an awakening, especially when you're younger. Some people never snap out of that. But when you're younger, you start off as girl and boy, life seems equal. You're playing, you're out on the playground, he's running, you're running, he's jumping, you're jumping, and then you grow, the woman gets her period. Oh, gosh, he doesn't have one. He's still running and jumping. You're going somewhere, you're getting pads, and you're keeping your legs closed now because now you have a period. You decide you want to have a relationship. You get together, you're so in love, and now it feels a little equal again because he's fused with you. You know, he understands you have a cycle, and he's, you know, he's more mature, and you feel like you're coming together again. Then you get married, and then you have children, you know, and then you have a child. You're the child. And I remember this kind of coming out in me during this period of time really bad. I didn't know I had that it's not fair mentality until I was pregnant, and I was once again limited in my mind. You know, while he's off doing God knows what, you know, and we're young, we're 20, in our 20s, married, had no business getting married anyway, 21, and I'm pregnant, and I'm thinking, wow, he still looks fabulous, and I'm looking like I'm weighing like close to 200 pounds, and I remember thinking, it's not fair. And I remember going into that little kid mode where I'm like, you wait until I have this baby and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't even really realize. Now, I'm not saying that he was perfect. He wasn't perfect. As a matter of fact, it contributed, kind of triggered that it's not fair mentality because, you know, had he really been there, I probably would not have gone there. But getting people to see that, no matter what someone does, remaining consistent to who you are, not letting that person bring that out in you, not allowing that person to bring that out in you. And I'm human, I allowed it. And I think that started like the whole little back and forth kind of thing. And I think a lot of women, especially when you're dealing with the women's lib, aftermath where women want to make the same, they want to work the same, they want to do this, they want to do that, and it becomes more of a competition, and you're like, wow, you're a woman, you're a man, you complement each other, no one can really compete with the other, you know.
True. And it's funny because, you know, what I find is that I don't think it's any mistake that you attracted your ex-husband. This was something in you that you needed to learn a lesson about. And people are mirrors for us. We often attract people who will bring out our lessons. When it's early in life, or even if it's not early in life, but it's just stuff that we've been stubborn about and we haven't wanted to look at, why do you think you'll hear about somebody saying they've attracted the same sort of friendships or they've attracted the same sort of romantic partners? There's obviously something there that you're supposed to be learning. You're choosing that person because that's the person that can help show what that highlight, what that lesson is. And if you don't get it, then you're going to continue to repeat it. So, of course, like you said, you didn't know you had that part of you that was alive and well until you married him. And when something all of a sudden comes up in you, the best thing to do is ask yourself, okay, what is this? And then take a look instead of just, you know, looking at the partner and what's not working. I mean, unfortunately, for a lot of us that have been through divorce, we know that marriage is a pretty amazing teaching ground, and especially if you get married when you're young, chances are that you may very well, you know, there's a lot of things you haven't figured out about yourself that you're going to figure out during that marriage. And if you can both do it together and evolve together and find that you, as you, you know, claim who you really are, you're still in sync with each other, then you're going to have an amazing marriage. Like my parents, they just celebrated their 44th wedding anniversary on Sunday, and they're like teenagers running around having a great time together. You know, myself didn't quite take that route, but, you know, did I still learn a tremendous amount so that I can have an amazing relationship today? Yes. And one of the most important things I learned is that everybody out there, if you are wondering what power really is, I know we always, you know, associate it with money. Power is choice. And one of the reasons why we associate power with money is just because lots of times when you make more money, you have more choices. But make no mistake about it. I don't care if you've got a penny to your name. Your greatest power is your choice. And the more aware you become of who you are and what you desire in your life, and then you choose to take actions and make choices that support you enjoying what you want to enjoy in your life, you're going to have it, and you're going to have some version of it, and life is going to be good. But that's where your power is. And if you, you know, just bring people into your life and you decide, well, you know, this is my friend I've had for 20 years. So it doesn't matter if we get together for a cup of coffee and I feel horrible afterwards and she makes me feel bad about myself and I feel, you know, worse after seeing her than before. She's my friend and I just have to keep her as a friend. No, actually you don't. Your choice is to say to yourself, what kind of experience do I want to have? How do I want to feel about the people in my circle? Do I want to uplift them and have them uplift me? Do I want them to be supportive of me and me be supportive of them? Do I want to have reciprocity? And if that's the case, then as you're out there meeting people and bringing people into your circle, you have to make sure that they qualify to be there. And that's your choice. And you got to use it. And if you don't use that power, you know, then you may find that there's a lot of things out of whack in your life that just don't feel good.
Well, I just want our listeners to go to your website. They can find you at charlysense.com. And I love your website, by the way. I meant to tell you that. It's so well put together, and you can find everything on it really clearly. This is something that a lot of websites now are putting so much on here, but your website is really kind of it's to the point, like your services. You remember you said that that's how you coach. So I'm looking, and when I was looking before, I'm on it now, but when I was looking at it before, I was like, wow, it's to the point. You have everything on here, strategy-based plus solution-oriented equals swift, lasting results. And just beautiful. You're just a beautiful girl. And your personality and everything, it just fits with what you do. So it seems to me, I'm not God, but it seems to me that you're operating within your purpose, which is always important when you're offering the services that you're offering, because so many people are in the business of quote unquote coaching other people. And, you know, we're not to judge who's authentic and who's not, but when you tell your story and your experience and your own transformation, and then if you go to your site and look at your message, you definitely have continuity in that, which makes me feel comfortable uniting with you and actually having you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Candy. I really appreciate it. I'm going to be adding a few things to the website, but not, you know, everything will still be in the same line of what we have now, but I'm going to have some video teaser. Well, I'm going to have some little video clips that are teasers for the book, just some of the tips. It'll be kind of be a sneak peek, but I'll do them as little YouTube videos, so they'll all be under 2 minutes, but they'll have some little tips from the book just to kind of give people a preview of what's coming, and then I'll also have some audio clips from interviews I've done. And I'll have a few more articles. I'm going to add some new, you know, there's about 20, somewhere between 20 and 25 articles on there that were previously published that I've written. But these are going to be some new current all around the idea of putting you first, very supportive for women on relationships and friendships and really looking at all of that, because that's what I see today that we're missing. You know, I know a lot of people are struggling because of everything that happened in the economy and the changes, but you know, if there's one thing I can say, and I guess for me this time, it's reminiscent of a time I had in my life when the whole world wasn't going through it. And that was just having to rebuild my life from a place of saying, wow, every single aspect right now is a lie. It's not authentic to me. And really feeling like I had to start over and figure out what's important. And that, you know, there's an advantage to that, because as I look at the number of people that I meet that are struggling with anxiety and depression, I tell them, you know, your body, you don't forget how important your body is. It is a tool, and it is like it's like a big sensor system. And if you think about your car and the engine in your car, or you have all these fuses in your car, which I know are electronic today, but when you get your little warning lights on in your car, and they can be kind of annoying and they blink at you or whatever, and you say, oh gosh, okay, I've got to check my fluid, or I've got to check my brakes, or I got to check my tire pressure. Those are all warnings to you. And we've gotten into a place where people have taken the warnings that their bodies all of a sudden give them and just say, you know what, just go to the side. Just, I don't want to deal with that right now. Can somebody help me not feel this? And I think what we need to remember is, just like you were talking about with the anxiety you had and figuring out, okay, it was about this sense of dread, and really getting to a point where you could pinpoint what was causing it so that naturally you could ease it. I think everybody's got to remember that we need to be more aware, and that if you're having certain types of feelings, you know, take that opportunity to listen and say, let me start taking some inventory right now. Because that's one of the things I teach my clients. I want to help as many people as I can. It comes from a place of my own personal passion over what I went through and not being able to find someone like me when I was looking for somebody like me. But more importantly, I do a lot of things in my life that I love, so I don't need to create a business in which I make people codependent on me or need to have the same people coming back week after week to fill all my slots. I want as many people coming in and coming through, and I want to give them tools not only for right now, but when I'm teaching you how to pinpoint, helping you pinpoint what's going on, I'm also teaching you at the same time how to pinpoint what's going on in the future. So, yeah, you might come back to me for a refresher and say, hey, you know, let me make sense of this, or can you create a strategy for something else? But at the same time, I want you to be able to take what I'm giving you and actually use it in the future, so you're not always needing to come back to me or someone like me. You're actually building on what you've learned.
Well, hold on a second. I think we have a caller on the line. Hello?
Hi. I'd like to ask, what does putting me first mean in concrete examples?
Well, for one thing, putting you first would be getting a clear idea of what your needs and your desires are for your life from a healthy perspective. Not the selfish perspective of, I just want this right now. But if you really get an idea of what's important to you, what are the values and the beliefs that you want to live by and have your life reflect, then Putting you first means committing to that through all your choices and your actions. If you want to have, for instance, let's say that in your family life, one of the things that's important is that you have time with your family. Then with all the choices that you're making about your job, about your work, about how much money you're spending on other things that are going to affect how much you have to work, you're going to be looking at those things through your perspective of, okay, I've got to put me first and put my goals first, so that you're actually making sure that everything you're setting up supports what you want rather than conflicts with what you want. Does that make sense?
Well, it's kind of ubiquitous for me. How about that philosophy working within a committed relationship? Can you give me an example of how that would enhance or improve the relationship that a woman, if a woman has that philosophy, how that would enhance the relationship between she and her boyfriend or she and her husband?
Well, first of all, it's something that you both have to do. And the idea is if you're going to have a great relationship, the better relationship you're going to have is going to be coming from you choosing somebody who you're organically connected with. In other words, your goals, your desires are pretty similar and overlap in the most important places, like what you hold dear, how you want to give and show affection, the ways in which you're, how you handle conflict resolution. Those kinds of things are crucial. Now, when I say a woman putting her first in her relationship, just from that side of it, well, she has to be really clear about what she wants to experience in that relationship and commit to that. Because if she doesn't, she's either going to resent her partner, resent the relationship, or both. And I'm sure you've seen examples of people, either yourself or people that you know, that seem to almost check out of the relationship. Putting you first is a responsibility to taking ownership of who you are and making sure that you fulfill the aspects of yourself that are important for you to feel good and feel peaceful and want to give to a relationship. So, you know, that's different for every person, and I certainly help people determine what those specific things for them are. In me, you know, in my relationship, I had very specific ideas about how I wanted my boyfriend to give me affection and receive affection. I knew that I was a very expressive person. I like to have a lot of communication. You know, some people want to talk at the kitchen table when they're having breakfast. Other people want to sit and have their newspapers. Something that simple might seem like it's irrelevant, but for a lot of us, it's not. And so if I'm going to put me first, then I have to be clear about what those things are. And then I've got to make sure that I don't settle for something that is not going to fulfill that. Because if I know that that's something important to me, and then I choose someone who can't or does not want to fulfill that, I'm just going to end up angry at them when that's not fair.
Well, then how do you distinguish between that philosophy and a me, myself, and I philosophy? Because it sounds like...
Because a me, myself, and I philosophy does not incorporate what it is you're trying to achieve. And if you heard me, think back to what I just said. I said for your relationship. That's not one-sided. That's two-sided.
Charlie,
I want something... Yes.
Let me give you just a quick example because we're almost out of time. We only have about 5 minutes left. Because what you're saying is, I tried that, and this is the caller, you can chime in too, as I present this. In my relationship that I'm in now, I remember the lessons that I had learned where I was reacting off of the other person. And I was really putting the other person first because I was reacting, seeing what they're going to do, and then I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do according to that person. Whereas in this relationship, I'm putting me first by being who I am and being authentic to the things that matter to me. And he was not used to that. He was used to a woman reacting to him and wanting to fix his dinner and his meal and wash his clothes and, you know, do all of these things that looked like they were putting him first, but they were really trapping him and luring him into a relationship. And he felt that if he would resist. And once he saw that I was putting myself first, not a me, myself, and I type of philosophy, but a I care about myself, then he began to care about me in a non-threatening way because he knew I was just doing it because I was focusing on me. And then when he realized I was focusing on me, and it made him feel comfortable focusing on me because he knew I wasn't going to ask him for anything, then he began to focus on himself. So then he began to put himself first, meaning that he put himself first, not resisting me or reacting to me. I put myself first, not resisting or not reacting to him. And then simultaneously, we uplifted each other and ended up kind of, you know, going in and out of this dance where we felt comfortable saying, well, honey, you go first, or this is for you, because now I have enough to give you because I put myself first. You know, rest is very important to him. So if it's something that I want to do, he'll say, whereas he used to would forego rest because he worked 12-hour shifts, and he would say, okay, I'll go, because he wanted to please me. And I remember us going out, and he would be nodding off, kind of tired because he had done his 12-hour shift. And I would say, don't ever not get your rest because I made a request. If I'm not considerate enough to recognize that you need your rest because I'm in a zone, because I may have been doing something for my kids or running around, you stop me and you look at me and say, honey, as bad as I want to go, I need about an hour, or maybe we can go tomorrow. He does that now, and he puts himself first, which makes him a better partner for me, which is not near the me, myself, and I philosophy of the narcissistic behavior that we see today. And
absolutely,
I think that's what Charlotte's talking about.
Ooh. Because you're also looking at, you know, what is the greater good that's in line. If you want a great relationship, then you, when you're putting yourself first and putting your desires first for a great relationship, you're not going to take actions that are just selfish, that are going to alienate you or your partner from each other. So, I mean, I think the best example is like with, you know, with arguing. How many people just want, you know, maybe they're mad and they just want to have this moment of just, I'm just going to say that because it's going to feel good because I'm really mad. But if you're actually going to put you first in your desires, and your desire is not to hurt and be mean to your partner, but you're just having a moment, then you're going to check yourself, and you're going to say, you know what, I'm having a moment, but I'm not going to go there because that's not what's actually going to produce what I want more. I'm going to have this moment, but then it's going to destroy something else, or it's going to contribute to something else in a negative way. So putting you first is really looking in the long term and in the whole scope of things, so that you can actually check yourself, and you do teach people how to treat you. So, you know, in my opinion, your relationship can only thrive as much as the individuals in it. And just like you said perfectly, Candy, you put you first, he puts him first, and then you always want to do things for each other. But at the same time, you're making sure that both of you are clear about what your needs and your wants are in a really healthy way.
Yeah, and I think because the society is so individualistic, and it has produced a very negative connotation to the phrase putting yourself first. When I first had my children, and I would tell my mom, Mom, my children are first, but they are not only. So don't look for me to actually treat them the way that you all treated us, where we were the only things in the world. You take care of them, and then you put them aside, and after they're taken care of, and then you have to take care of yourself.
Well, you know, my parents.
And putting yourself first.
Yes.
Your parents. Go ahead.
Well, I just remember my parents said something to us when we were really young, and I've never forgotten it. And they actually used to say to us, we come first to each other because we came first, but as a unit, you guys come first to us. And I never forgot that, because I really believe it's one of the things that made their relationship so incredibly solid. They never forgot that they came first and that they made a commitment to each other before they brought us into the world.
Right, and as I predicted, the time is going by, and we're going to have to wrap this up. We only have a minute left. Can you believe it?
Oh, it's been such a pleasure, Candy. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I really. We're gonna do it again, and I'm gonna talk with you about also doing some other things. So, you know, check your email, because you'll
great.
Be hearing from me.
Well, I'm sending you sunshine. I'm sending you warm sunshine. I hope it gets there soon.
Definitely. I'm receiving it because we are freezing here. Do you have a telephone number or anything, or you just use your website?
The best way to reach me is either my email direct, which is charlie.strategy@gmail.com, and that's spelled C-H-A-R-L-Y, charlie.strategy@gmail.com, or my website, which is like Common Sense, but it's Charlie Sense, charlysense.com, and there's links on every page to contact me directly.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, so as usual, reconstruct the world by reconstructing your mind. I know you can do it. And I will talk with you later. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you, and everybody have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.